As George said, my topic this afternoon is USDA's cotton price forecast, background and methodology. Before I start, I'd like to thank Steve McDonald, who was my co-author on the paper, and also the other members of USDA's Interagency Cotton Estimates Committee who participate and contribute to this process. I do have a few copies of my paper up here if anybody would like to take one. The 2008 Farm Bill ended a 79-year prohibition. USDA was prohibited by law from publishing cotton price forecasts from 1929 until 2008. This prohibition was the result of objections to a September 1927 price forecast, which members of Congress believed had triggered a market sell-off. We have been forecasting prices for internal use for many years because we need those for analytical and policy and program purposes. So we did have a history of cotton price forecasts. But our first published forecast was made this year in June 2008. Now, what price is it that we're projecting? USDA projects the NASS marketing year average price received by producers for upland cotton, which is a mouthful, so for shorthand we'll call that the farm price. The price projections appear each month in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report. The price forecast appears as a range interval until late in the marketing year. And the price forecast, as I said, is made by the Interagency Cotton Estimates Committee, which uses multiple sources and methods. So the purpose of this presentation is to talk about those sources and methods and some of the challenges that we've encountered. Okay, let's get a definition of the NASS farm price. The NASS farm price is an FOB warehouse price paid to producers as reported by buyers, including marketing cooperatives. NASS uses a stratified sample for merchants, but records all purchases by co-ops. The volume of NASS's sample generally accounts for about two-thirds of production, so it's fairly extensive. The NASS price is weighted and is an average of all qualities, so it's not for one specific quality. And the prices and weights are published in the NASS publication, Agricultural Prices, each month for the previous month. This is the price that's used by the Farm Services Agency to calculate the level of countercyclical payments. So the methods that we're using to forecast prices include tracking current price activity, looking at indications from futures prices, using some models of supply and demand. And for the range interval, we look at historical average accuracy of those internal price forecasts that we had a history of. Okay, starting with tracking the NASS price itself, this is something that becomes more useful as the marketing year progresses. As I said, the NASS price is weighted. So typically, and this is based on a five-year average, you get about 50% of the, you account for about 50% of that price by the end of December and about 80% of the price by the end of March. But you have to remember that there's a lag. So for example, we are going to revise our price forecast next Monday when we issue our next report in January. That will include information from the NASS agricultural prices that was published at the end of December, but that end of December report had a price for November. So when we make our January forecast, we'll have a record of NASS's prices for August through November. So there's about a, there's really about a six-week lag there. And it's kind of interesting, I think, more relevant when you consider the January, because February 1 is the deadline for FSA to make its first advance payment on the 2008 countercyclical. So that's the actual information, and then the rest of the information will be the forecast. So given the lag, the second price that we're tracking is the spot market price. Spot prices approximate farm prices pretty well, but don't have reporting lags because those prices are reported daily in local spot prices by the Agricultural Marketing Service. Unlike farm prices, spot prices are for particular qualities and are FOB car or truck, not FOB warehouse. So there are some differences. There are also some timing differences. Despite these differences, if you look back over history, you find that the spot price, the monthly average spot price for the base quality is a pretty close approximation for the farm price. It's averaged about 1.7 cents above the monthly farm price over this five-year period. Here's a graph that shows that, and you can see that that the fit is pretty good, nice and predictable, except when, and this is going to become a theme, you come to the most recent months, May through November 2008, where we begin to see a pretty significant deviation between the NAS price and the spot price. By the time we get to November of 2008, that difference is about 13 cents as opposed to the 1.7 cent difference that we saw in the five-year average. This is one of the many anomalies that we're experiencing in 2008-09, which is just generating a lot of exceptions to our historical averages and rules. Now, turning to the futures market, which is the third set of prices that we're tracking, indications from futures prices. Later months' futures prices are valuable because they provide a measure of the market's collective intelligence about price direction. We're using a simple regression of the contract's average for a given month relative to the season average price based on past relationships using a first differences method. And there's more detail on all of this in the written paper. For 2004 through 2007, the root mean square error using the November average of the December contract was 2.7 cents. However, the errors have grown larger in recent years. In December, using this method, that is the November average of the December contract, this method forecast a farm price of 39 cents. Our published forecast, the midpoint of the range was actually 46 cents. Another example of a difficulty that we had this year with futures prices that was reviewed extensively in Leslie Meyer's presentation just now is the difficulty with the basis. Fluctuations in the basis compromise your ability to use that futures price as a measure of what farm prices are going to do. And we had extreme fluctuations. These are monthly measures. But in March 2008, we had a basis rise to about 9 cents monthly average. It's come down since then, but this did present an additional challenge in terms of using futures prices to make forecasts. We're also looking at models of supply and demand. We have one that was recently developed by Steve McDonald and Olga Eisengildina of Clemson. The variables in this model are to predict the percent change in the real upland cotton price. And they include the percent change in the U.S. upland cotton stocks to use ratio, percent change in the U.S. upland supply, change in China's net imports, cotton under CCC loan as of January 31st as a share of U.S. use, percent change in the world supply outside of China, which is then adjusted for China's net trade. So you can see this is a very fairly comprehensive model, which includes both domestic and international supply-demand variables. The model's performance, and again, I refer you to the paper if you'd like more details. The model has errors that are comparable to USDA's early season forecasts. The model is unbiased, but using current supply and demand data, the model forecasts prices that are arguably too high. This model actually made a 70-cent forecast in December compared with a 46-cent midpoint that we actually forecast. Despite that, it's really very valuable to have a model like this. Each month when we forecast these prices, they are supposed to represent the particular set of supply and demand estimates that we're forecasting. So we need something that includes those measures of supply and demand in order to derive that. If we are getting a result that's very different than what market intelligence is indicating, it may be that there's just some sort of error factor that the model's not capturing, but it is a reason to go back and revisit the consistency of what those two different sources of information are telling us. So here, once again, you can see that the fit of this model is really pretty good, going all the way back to 1974, but we're getting a fairly significant deviation in 2008-09. We also look at both our own models and the ICAC's models of the A index, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to discuss that. Again, that's covered in the paper if you're interested. One actually of the more challenging problems that we faced is the setting of the price range intervals, and there are really a number of issues associated with this. And one of our difficulties, I think, was that we did not have experience doing this. We had always internally used just a single point estimate. So setting the ranges was new to us, although it's been done for many years on the other commodities, which did not have a prohibition. USDA is forecasting a symmetrical range, but in many cases, an asymmetrical range might be more appropriate, and that makes sense. The problem with an asymmetrical range is then your users of the information don't really know what they're dealing with, and that's why we're using the symmetrical range. I think most people want to go to that range. They want to find the midpoint. And if we used asymmetrical ranges, we don't have really a means of communicating that that's what we're doing. Conceptually, the price interval should be the range associated with the supply-demand estimates published that month. Since the S&D changes significantly as the season progresses, the hit rates, if you go back and look, that is the number of times that the final estimate actually falls within that range, tend to be low. The confidence intervals associated with the models that we're looking at are relatively wide. And actually, a lot of work has been done on this issue by Olga Eisengildina, Scott Irwin, and Daryl Good. They have studied the intervals published in the supply and demand estimates for corn, wheat, and soybeans. So I'd refer you to their work if you're interested. They did a paper in 2007 in which they proposed several methods for constructing confidence intervals for the grain and soybeans based on historical accuracy levels. And while USDA has not adopted these methods, the interagency committee, is using historical accuracy of our past internal forecasts as a guide for setting the range. This chart shows the 10-year average differences plus or minus by month for the USDA price forecast versus the final. So for example, you can see that in May and June, the average difference was plus or minus almost 20%. From the final. That's the average. This is actually pretty consistent with what Olga Eisengildina and her colleagues found when they studied corn, wheat, and soybeans. And they attributed it to the fact that in those early months, you really don't have a very good estimate of U.S. production yet, and the events just occur, which change price direction. So what are the final, the results, actually, of what we've been doing? We started in June and forecast a price midpoint of 65 cents with an interval of 14 cents. At that point, I think December futures were about 73 cents. We've come down, as I said, in December to 46 cents. Our interval is 10 cents, which actually is a little wider than what might be indicated by the historical accuracy. We've just felt that the uncertainty of the current season warranted that. As I look at this, I think of those old gentlemen, a congressman in 1929, and wonder what they would have thought of this. Okay, so to summarize, we have had unusual uncertainties affecting the 2008-09 season. In the early season, we had the problem with the anomalies in the basis. More importantly, economic collapse has drastically reduced estimates of worldwide demand, and that's been the main thing driving that price lower. This problem has been exacerbated by our reliance on expert macroeconomic projections to forecast demand, and those throughout these months have consistently proven too optimistic. You know, we look at Global Insight and Oxford and the IMF and so forth. All of those forecasting agencies have just been behind the curve in terms of what's been happening to the worldwide economy. The December 2008 futures contract is probably the most volatile on record. And by this I mean intraday volatility, not intraday, the way the exchange measures it. Just looking at closing prices, comparing the maximum to the minimum values for the 2008 December contract, that difference was 56 cents. It peaked in March at 95 cents and bottomed in November at 39 cents. I don't have data going all the way back. I had 20 years of data, and it was certainly the largest in 20 years, so I suspect it's a record. Conclusions. USDA is using a variety of sources and methods to forecast cotton prices, relying on its collective judgment to decide on a price and interval each month. And I think you can see why we do that rather than using something more transparent such as a model. We don't really have a single method at this point that gives us, you know, what we would consider to be a reliable forecast. The price selected is associated with that month's supply and demand estimates. The forecasting of the intervals is problematic from the perspective of both method interpretation, and it probably needs more attention. And finally, the 2008-09 season has presented a unique set of problems due to market volatility and severe economic downturn. Thank you very much.